Okay, Chuck, this one's ready. Stand clear. Timber!
Well, that's another one, McGinty.
Yeah. Boy, am I fed up with chopping these gosh darn trees down day after day. Who'd be a lumberjack?
What are you talking about, man? It's a great life.
Ah, shucks.
You're like all the other guys around here moaning all the time. Why be miserable? Look at me. I really enjoy being a lumberjack. You gotta whistle while you work. You gotta whistle.
Well, that was an excerpt from The Most Happy Fella. The last in our series, A Show to Remember, which may also help you to forget the face I pull to get a laugh at this point every week.
Meanwhile, for those who haven't been able to see that face, here is a sort of radio show which is beyond our ken. Among those taking part are Sir Hugh Grit, the cloakroom attendant's poetry lovers circle, Murchison Thripp, Miss Rona Rancy.
She's gone off a bit.
Game to the last. To continue. Lofty Shorthouse. The Sheik of Golders Green. And, of course, Mr. Kenneth Horne, who prefers to remain anonymous. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Anonymous.
He thinks he's going to be in the next series, I expect. Welcome to this last in our present series of Beyond Our Ken, affectionately known to us as B.O.K., because we hope it'll be O.K. on the night. Well, now, let me, as usual, tell you what's been happening since we last met. On Saturday, I went to the cinema and saw a film all about life among the Eskimos. Quite an eye-opener it was. I learnt one thing from it. Those Eskimo girls will do anything for a cloth coat. I thought you'd have to think about that one a bit. Monday, I was going to see Fanny by gaslight, but she'd had electricity put in. So instead, I decided to take a bus somewhere. It was great fun. The London Transport were a bit annoyed. I took it to Pontefract. Anyway, it was all right. I took the bus back 2 days later, and they thought it was just running late. On Wednesday, I got into more trouble when I had my face slapped at a big cocktail party I attended. Very charming young lady. It wasn't really my fault. I mean, the badge she was wearing did say press. Thursday, I spent most of the day at home playing the piano. Now, that may surprise you, but for years I've been playing the piano on and off. Always had a rather slippery stool. Actually, at one time, I even played in a trio. It was only a small trio, just the two of us. Me on the piano and Yehudi Menuhin on vibes. However, Thursday evening, I did pop out for a meal, and I ordered a salad. Well, when it arrived, it looked a bit bare, so I called the waiter over and said, "Just look at this salad. I've never seen a salad so bare." And he said,
"Oh, well, sir, it's the French dressing, you know."
Which explained everything, really. That's all the news up to date. Now, where's the cast? Where's the cast? Come on. Come on. All right. Now, gather round. Listen a moment. Now, look, this is the last show, you know, and I've been thinking perhaps we ought to make a suitable gesture to our producer. No. William's not that sort of gesture at all. I mean, well, I think we ought to show our appreciation for what he's done for us.
Wonderful idea.
Oh, I agree. Yes. Yes.
Well, what has he done for us?
Oh, well, all sorts of things, like... Well, then he was always very... You must admit, he... Yes, what has he done for us?
Oh, no, Ken, be fair. I mean, I'm sure we can all honestly say that whenever the opportunity arose, Jakes was always there with a helping hand.
Yes, you can say that again.
I mean, you couldn't have a more polite, courteous, considerate old gentleman. Well, look what his wife told us. He never forgets to hold open the door for her when she fetches the coal in.
Yes, well, perhaps we should give him a small token of our esteem, but what now?
Why don't we give him something to wear on formal occasions?
Such as?
Well, for instance, teeth.
Ah, dear, you know, it's so difficult to know the right thing. Now, let's see. Has anybody got anything they'd like to get rid of? Kenneth Williams.
What a splendid idea. I'm sure Jakes would love to get rid of Kenneth Williams.
That's charming.
All right, Paddock, why don't you give him one of your old suits, like the one you're wearing?
Now, just a minute. Look, this isn't getting us anywhere. Betty.
Yes, Ken, yes.
Can you think of anything we can give our producer?
No, nothing.
Well, that's the best suggestion so far.
Of course. Why didn't we think of it before? We'll give him nothing.
At least it's practical.
Yes. Oh, all right, let's get him over here and tell him. Uh-oh, Jakes. Where is he? Jakes.
Coming.
Well, Jakes, the cast and I have been having a little chat, and, well, Jakes, on behalf of all the cast and myself, as a token of the very high esteem in which we hold you, I have much pleasure in presenting you with this.
Oh, thank you. What is it?
Nothing.
Oh, you shouldn't have.
Go on, Jakes, take it. We know it's not much, but it's the thought that counts.
Feet.
Oh, no, really, I hardly know what to say.
Well, that makes a change.
Oh, look, a little tear has crept into the corner of his eye.
Well, it's not every day he gets nothing.
All I can say is, I shall treasure it always.
Oh, come on. You can do better than that, Jakes. Make it more dramatic.
Yes,
get it off the paper.
Oh, yes. More feeling. I try it with the emphasis on treasure. I shall treasure it always.
I shall treasure it always. Exits dramatically, effects door shut.
Those are the directions.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You'd think he'd know, wouldn't you? Now, door, please.
Well, thank goodness he's gone.
Well, now, on with the show. You know, I thought it'd be... Hello? Who can that be, as if I didn't know? Hello?
Good heavens, it's Kenneth Thorne.
Pat Lancaster, you've been dying to say that, haven't you? All right, sing, Pat.
Day in, day out, the same old hoodoo follows me about. The same old pounding in my heart whenever I think of you. And darling, I think of you day in and day out. Day out, day in, I needn't tell you how my days begin. When I awaken with a tingle. One possibility in view, that possibility of maybe seeing you. Come rain, come shine, I need you and to me the day is fine. Then I kiss your lips and the pounding becomes the ocean's roar, a thousand drums. Can't you see it's love? Can there be any doubt?
Jolly nice pants.
Thank you. And now, Ken, as this is the last show for a while, we've got a surprise for you. Stand by.
This week, we bring you a scorching and sensational life story.
It's savage, sordid, tempestuous.
Packed with human emotions and wild passion, we present...
The Kenneth Horne Story.
Only once in a lifetime does a personality come along who possesses so many fine qualities. Wit, charm, abounding talent. A man who is loved by everyone. But unfortunately, we're not doing the Kenneth Williams story. Ours is the Kenneth Horne story.
Yes, Kenneth Horne. Gay, vital, ebullient, mellifluous. A man of infinite taste. Elegant, charming, brilliant raconteur. A rich...
Oh, get on with it.
You mind?
Well, hanging it out like that.
Pardon that interruption, then. Kenneth Horne. How much do we really know of him?
Well, I could tell you a thing or two.
Do you remember that voice?
Oh, I said, really, you haven't got her here, have you?
Yes. Come in, Mavis Prendergast.
Well, well, well. After all these years, eh?
I'm terribly sorry. I'm afraid I don't remember you.
Of course you do. How could you forget your old games, mistress?
Well, well. Bless my soul. Bless my soul, old knees-bend Prendergast.
Yes, that's right. It's me, dear, dear Lemuel.
Lemuel?
Oh, yes. His name then used to be...
No, no, please, Mavis.
But I thought everyone knew. Lemuel Watersprite.
Lemuel Watersprite.
All right. That's enough out of you, Leslie Blancheflower.
How did you know?
Anyway, all we're trying to establish is that at school, Kenneth Horne was a very good sport.
So was Mavis Prendergast.
From school, Kenneth Horne went to Cambridge University, and as a young man, distinguished himself in the debating society. His wit and oratory won general acclaim. They still talk of his sparkling repartee on the occasion when one of our up-and-coming politicians was speaking in the union debate.
Furthermore, this House believes in the freedom of individual expression. And, gentlemen, if there ever comes a time when we should lose sight of that glorious adventuring spirit and the true conception of a life free from one can fear, not to mention the British Empire, in which our loyalty and devotion must never for a minute falter, then, gentlemen, this I would finally say. Let us go forward with supreme optimism in the prosperity and continuing progress of expansion, knowing that we, of all people, believe in our island heritage.
Oh, belt up!
From university, he entered the world of commerce.
A financial wizard with the luck of Midas. Anything he touched turned to gold.
For instance, he had a golden secretary. But even in the frantic whirl of business life, he found time for show business. He formed a dance band known as the Kenneth Horne Hotshots.
Ken himself played alto sax and also delighted the customers with his vocals, with such popular numbers of the day as...
Good night, Cock Foster, you city of a million memories, the fragrant perfume of a thousand cigars, and boozing in bars in June. Good night, Cock Foster, it's 40 minutes on a 2-9 bus, A trip to paradise that's hard to resist. It's shrouded in mist in June. Sweet city of Middlesex, you turn me into a broken-hearted clown. From Piccadilly, it's a stone's throw, just at the other end of town. Good night, Cock Foster.
And good night, Kenneth Horne.
Then came the war.
Our hero was very popular with the Army and Navy.
He went into the Air Force. As an RAF officer, he made something of a reputation for himself.
Here, you, just because there's a blackout, there's no need...
Let us gloss over his war efforts.
His rank was wing commander, and after the war, his rank was the one just outside Euston Station.
One day, his taxi carried an important passenger from the BBC.
I say, driver.
Yes, sir?
I've been studying you closely. Your looks and appearance are just what we want.
Oh, really?
Yes, you'll be absolutely right for radio.
Success followed success. Comedy shows, panel games, variety. Kenneth Horne was the busiest man in the BBC.
Apart, of course, from the chap who dealt with complaints from listeners.
Almost every night he was working. And long will Kenneth Horne remember those 20 questions.
I'm home, dear.
Where do you think you've been?
Out.
Alone?
No.
Who with?
Someone.
Animal?
Yes.
Female?
Yes.
Could you eat her?
I certainly could.
And the next object is a rolling pin.
No.
A rolling pin.
Like most of those in the limelight, Kenneth Horne pays the penalty of fame.
Mister, can I have your autograph?
Yes, of course. Now, lend me your pencil, will you? There we are.
Oh, ta. I suppose you are Mr. Kenneth Horne, the famous playwright?
Well, no, I'm afraid I'm the other one.
Oh. Have you got a rubber on you?
So we come to the present day.
And let us end the Kenneth Horne story with a final word from the star of our show, Kenneth Horne.
Well, thank you. You know, ladies and gentlemen, Beyond Our Ken doesn't really have a star. It's a show that is based on teamwork. The spirit of comradeship, which the cast share, is unique in show business.
I quite agree.
Nobody's asking you.
I'll say what I think.
Don't be so rude, William.
You keep out of this, Mark.
What you're saying, Paddy, it's your answer. Don't do it for me.
That's all right, we were only joking, but I'm certainly not joking when I say it's always a pleasure to introduce the Fraser Hayes Four.
In Dublin's fair city, where the girls are so pretty, I first set my eyes on sweet Molly Malone. She wheeled her wheelbarrow through streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh. Fishmonger, but sure 'twas no wonder, for so were her father and mother before, and each wheeled their barrow through streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh. And that was the end of sweet Molly Malone. Now her ghost wheels her barrow through streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels. Alive, alive, oh, alive.
And so to the Kenneth Horne documentary feature, Hornorama. Yes, once again, Kenneth Horne and his team of investigators bring you a factual report on topics of immediate interest. And this week we present a close-up on France. Chers auditeurs, écoutez maintenant un rapport factuel des sujets immédiatement intéressants.
Which roughly translated means Douglas Smith ate un grand bons. Well, now then, first of all, let's talk to this gentleman. You, sir, I believe you're a regular visitor to France.
That is so. Oui. Once a year, I spend several weeks in the south of France, Cannes, Nice, Saint-Tropez, or some such sun-soaked resort.
What sort of a resort was it, sir?
Sun-soaked.
Oh, yes. Now, what do you like to do?
All sorts of things. I spend most of my days basking in the sun, swimming, water skiing, sightseeing, lazing outside cafes, sipping soft drinks. And at night, well, there's so many things. There's the casino, restaurants, bars, saucy shows. Oh, it's one gay, endless round of pleasures.
Yes, but isn't all this rather expensive?
Yes, but I don't mind splashing out occasionally.
Well, now we are privileged to meet a remarkable old gentleman who lives and works in Paris. Good evening, sir. Good evening.
Good evening to you, sir. Good evening. I'm very privileged that you should call upon me.
Thank you, sir. Now, tell me, whereabouts in Paris do you work?
I work in one of them naughty review places. You know where everyone...
Yes, I know. Quite, sir. I understand. How long have you been there?
35 years.
How long?
35 years. Yes.
Now, sir, I presume you like your job.
Oh, no, not really.
Well, why not?
Well, it gets a bit cold posing like that every night.
Well, now, France. Firstly, it is inevitable that we should think of its gay, romantic capital. Yes, Paris, the magic mecca of tourists the world over. And wherever there are tourists, you can be sure there will be those whose job it is to cater for tourists.
Hello, Rodney.
Bonjour, Charles. What did you think of last week's lot?
Peasants, Rodney. Absolute peasants.
I know. The Louvre, the Eiffel Tower, the Folie Bergère, and that's their lot.
Yes. If I hear another one say that tower's quite an Eiffel, I shall scream.
Well, what can you expect with the people that are coming to Paris these days?
Yes, I got my own back on one of them, though. I told him to spend a night out with April.
You did?
I did! And when he said he'd never heard of her, I said, everyone's heard of April in Paris.
Oh, you are a rag.
Still, it's no laughing matter, really. Only made a few francs last week.
Me too. Let's hope this boat load's a bit more culture conscious.
Yes, here they come.
Postcard.
Naughty postcard.
One cannot think of France without thinking of wine. Not unnaturally, since the produce of its famous vineyards are known the world over. For those who might like to know a little more about winemaking, we sent Cecil Snaith to Bordeaux.
Yes, listeners, I am speaking to you now from outside a beautiful old chateau in the vineyards where some of the most superb wine is produced. Now, some of you who are not wine drinkers may be put off by the old conception that the grapes are trodden by barefooted French peasants. So let me assure you that these days it is much more modern and hygienic. They wear boots. The whole process of winemaking is absolutely fascinating, and I'm now going down into the cellars of the old chateau where the wine has been fermenting in large vats and I'm told is now matured and ready for bottling. So, let's go down and see for ourselves. It's rather dark in here, of course, but if I remember rightly, the steps down are just about it.
Oh! Ah!
And this is Chateau Snaith, 1960, returning you to the studio.
Finally, let us spare a thought for those whose sense of daring and adventure prompts them to attempt a journey to France by swimming the Channel. Yes, and in the summer of every year, it's a common sight to see the small boats crossing the water with their hopeful companions swimming alongside.
Keep it up, Felicity.
Ambrose, I'm getting so tired, my darling.
Never mind, we're nearly there. Come on faster, or it'll be dark before we land.
Ambrose, I'm hungry.
What, again? All right. Open your mouth and I'll chuck another sardine sandwich in.
Oh, dear, you missed.
Oh. Hard luck. That was the last one, too.
I don't think I can go any further, Andrew.
But you must. Look, Cape Grisnez is just ahead. You can't give up now, you silly old faggot.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear.
Come on, Felicity, that's it. Forward, side, together. Forward. Oh, dear. We're here. We've made it.
I'm absolutely exhausted.
Oh, stop complaining. You've been moaning all the way across.
Never again, Ambrose.
What do you mean, never again?
What I say, you and your bright idea.
Well, it's the cheapest way I know to get to France.
You
Well, there you are. So ends another series of Beyond Our Ken. We'll be back later in the year. So until we meet again, this is Kenneth Horne saying goodbye for now and leaving you with this final thought from a listener who says, if all the thoughts at the end of the show are provided by listeners, what's the scriptwriter doing?
You've either been listening to what I've just missed, Beyond Our Ken, a sort of recorded radio show which gave employment to Kenneth Horne and also to Kenneth Williams, Hugh Paddock, Betty Marsden, Bill Pertwee, Pat Lancaster, the Fraser Hayes Four, and the BBC Variety Orchestra conducted by Paul Fennelly, who played Edwin Braden's music, which was strictly incidental. The script, believe it or not, was written, and letters of complaint should be sent to Eric Merriman. However, the onus must inevitably fall on our producer, Jake Sprout.